As promised, we're joined right now by another guest in studio. He is the head baseball coach at Vanderbilt. He led Vanderbilt to a second College World Series title this season. He is a two-time National Coach of the Year. He is a three-time SEC Coach of the Year. He was selected for induction into the American Baseball Coaches Association Hall of Fame class of 2020. Vanderbilt won the SEC regular season title and the tournament title, and they set the league record for wins and tied the record for draft picks. What I'm saying is they had an amazing year, 59-12. And I said, if you are ever in Southern California, Tim Corbin, you've got to come in studio. And he did just that. Tim, it is so good to see you in person. How are you?
Great. Great studio. I love this.
Not too bad, right?
No, it's nice. The pictures, you can take those pictures down to me, though. That's tough to watch. It's tough to see.
Come on, man. They got to look at me all day for 3 hours.
Yeah.
This is good. You're upgrading my real estate. All right, so you and I spoke shortly after you won the national title in June. What has life been like since then? When, and what have you been up to?
Pretty busy, actually. I mean, don't really have too much time to decompress this time of year because it's recruiting time. And we got into camp a couple weeks right after we played, a couple days. And then after that, I mentioned went up to Cape Cod and saw our kids play up in the Cape Cod League. And then past couple of weeks, been recruiting. Been down here or across here in Orange County area, Long Beach, watching the area code games. And that's always been a lot of fun. Done that for 25 years. So it's good to kind of recapture this area and get back here and see some of the kids we signed.
All right, so what are you looking for down here? What are the area code games all about?
Area code games are made up of teams from all different area codes around the country. So you have Midwest kids, you have West Coast kids, East Coast kids, and they split them up. And the major league organizations put a uniform on them, whether it's Yankees or Brewers or Rangers and Nationals, and just a lot of teams that play against one another, and they play about 4 or 5 games a day for about 10, 12 days. So that's what we've been watching.
Yeah, it's really interesting because my kids both played club ball out here, and I've got one son going to Wisconsin this fall. My younger son starts high school. He's still playing club ball and high school baseball. Tim, it's amazing to me how different baseball is even from here to 10 miles down the road and how different it is and the way they approach it. What's your general take on Southern California baseball? What are the kids like out here and the way they play?
Well, they're very good. I mean, they play a lot, so they're more savvy to the game. Weather's excellent, a little bit different than the Northeast kids. But I think that's what makes these games unique is because you get a lot of Northeast kids mixed in with the Orange County kids and kids from all over, so you kind of see the style of play. But I would say, more than anything, the kids from California are groomed in the game and pretty savvy and have a different feel about how to play the game.
Vanderbilt head baseball coach Tim Corbin is joining me in studio. Now, in terms of your team, there's this great story about the moment when you knew this year's team could be really special. And that moment did not take place on the field. Mm-hmm. It didn't take place in the weight room. It was around Christmas when you received a report on the team's academic performance in the fall semester. What was the report like, and where did that let you know about this team and how good it might be?
Well, Maggie and I go up to Boston to celebrate the holidays, and right about the time we go, it's kind of just before Christmas, I always receive the grades. And, you know, when you're a coach, you got your eyes on that because it's obviously the performance and eligibility of your kids, which Vanderbilt's never an issue. But at the same time, you want to make sure that your kids are doing well. So when I got that report, opened it up, and it was stellar. It was over a 3.0 team grade point average. But more than the grades itself, it just made me kind of reflect on the fall. And I thought to myself, you know, I didn't get one call regarding the kids in terms of behavior, social behaviors.
Not one.
And that's tough to come by. When you got 35 guys, you know, there's a lot of behaviors that do happen. But they were all positive. And I just think at that time, it made me think this is a mature group. They're making decisions for the right reasons. And the harmony within the group was good. And I felt like everyone, you feel like you always have some talent. But in order for that talent to come out, they have to be doing the right things. And at that point right there, I thought, okay, you know, I don't know if you're going to win a national championship, but I think we're going to be successful.
You know, it's a different group. And in the sense, not just that it's a group that stays out of trouble and a group that gets good grades. In talking to Kumar Rocker earlier in the tournament run, and then talking to you after it, one of the reoccurring themes was the leadership of the senior class. Now, for those who know the class, they know that this group lost one of their own. In Donnie Everett. He passed away tragically in 2016. First off, let me ask about Donnie. What was he like as a person?
Fun, country kid. He was a only child, Teddy and Susan, parents. I think when you talk about baseball talent, not the kid, he was probably seen as the next great one. His last pitch he threw was 101 miles an hour. It was in the SEC tournament. And what they did in memoriam to him is they put the 101 on the video board. And they have that up there every year when we play in the tournament. But in terms of a kid, he was very fun-loving. I mean, that's the vision I have of him was that very last day when we worked out in the morning before he went fishing. He was just screwing around and having a good time. Jolly, he's about 6'2", 220 pounds, country kid, simple, smart at the same time. But if our guys were anywhere and they were having fun, he was in the middle of it. So he was that kid that had a tremendous sense of humor.
So, Tim, what do you make of the way the class responded to the tragedy and then that they brought Donnie's parents onto the stage after winning the title this year?
You know, Jim, in 16, I didn't know if we'd ever get off the ground again, to be honest with you. There were many times I go back and talk to my wife and say, geez, I don't know if I can do this, and I don't know if we can keep moving. And sometimes it was torturous, you know, in terms of the 16 year, 17 year. But the fact that seven seniors came back, some of them were drafted, decided to come back and be part of their last season and have it come full circle was really amazing for a lot of different reasons, because to have a good year is one thing. To have one of those legacy years is another thing. And when we did and we finished it off, the Everetts were a part of it. And, you know, I guess the positive out of losing someone is we gained their parents. Because a lot of times, Jim, when you have kids, you don't really get to know their parents, nor do you want to know their parents. You want to keep it at a distance.
Right.
But Teddy and Susan became almost like staff members now. So everything that we do with the staff, we invite them too. So obviously we went out to Omaha. They came with us, and it was great to bring them on stage to celebrate that.
Tim Corbin is joining us. Tim, you've mentioned Maggie a couple of times, so let me ask you this. A number of years back, your wife Maggie and you had a conversation about the concept of the last game of the year and the fact that for most teams, the last game of the year is going to be a loss in a tournament. It's going to be tough. There's going to be sadness that comes along with that. Her point was, if you're going to focus on the last game, there's a good chance that it's going to be with a lot of sadness. You shifted the focus. What did you shift it to?
I think got away from the scoreboard more than anything else. I mean, I think just simply that it was that more than anything else. She did say that. It was right about the time her oldest was sick, and I think we were going through an emotional time. And she said, if you're just focusing on winning the last game of the year, she goes, you're going to die a very frustrated man. You got to find other ways to get something out of this, which I have, but I didn't really look at it that way. So I think what she did is, like a lot of people in your life, they give you perspective. And she just gave me perspective on what we were doing as a family and how we were sharing these moments with the kids. And we just kind of turned our attention more to that and did some of the small things better than the big things. And then the big things started to happen.
Tim, you want perspective. I mean, you look at the spot you're in right now, but in the grand scheme of things, it was not that long ago that you were coaching a Presbyterian and sleeping in your car on recruiting visits in order to save money. What do you remember about those days?
They're probably tough at the time, but when you look back at them, you see how they provided some type of foundation for you. I think the thing that, you know, I try to do with the kids too is as they proceed through college athletics and as they garner some attention, just retain your innocence. Don't ever lose your innocence, whether you're a major league player or whatever you do. And I think I try to follow that same path. I remember where I came from. I knew what it was like, much like you and your business. And you start off slow and you wonder if you're ever going to get to the place that you think you could get, nor do you have that vision. So I think I've always been a Presbyterian guy. Even at Vanderbilt, I feel like I'm a Presbyterian coach. I value things, and I want our kids to value things too, because that's very important. So I don't see anything around me as being grander than what it is. I try to keep it very simple.
We're talking to Tim Corbin for a few more moments. Now, when you and I spoke after you won the last title, we talked about the fact that Jerry Stackhouse has already been trying to learn from you. He's not the only one. Head football coach Derek Mason has talked about how much he's learned from you in terms of teaching the details of the game. How do those details, whether it's the cleanliness of the dugout, the fact that the notebooks are in the right spot in the classroom, all the little things, how does that show up in success on the field?
I just think that awareness skills of males are things that have to continually be touched upon. I think it's like a vitamin. And we start every day in a classroom before we go to the field. And I spend about 30 or 45 minutes every day talking about concepts. Could be small concepts, could be character traits, it could be anything. But I think when you start to become very protective of your identity and who you are, you start becoming protective of what you have and the people around you. And when guys start to do that, they become interdependent. When they become interdependent, they become very good teammates. And I think it's for them to focus on their awareness level and what's around them and be respectful of the things that they have and the people that are around them, because eventually that teammate type concept, it starts to flow into what they become, whether it's a husband or a parent. They become very protective of that too. So really, I'm just trying to get a bunch of kids to reach maturity, maybe at a quicker rate than they would if no one broached those subjects.
Now, you mentioned in passing some of the guys that come back to the program. Now that you've won a couple of national championships, when your MLB players come back to train, mm-hmm. and they show you the love and respect that they have for you in the program, it's got to be something. Like when David Price says, quote, Coach Corbin is a second father to me, what's it like to hear that? What's that mean to you?
Oh, I try not to overstate my importance with them in terms of how they feel about me that way, because I think the thing that I am is I'm a step parent. And when Maggie and I joined, I joined a family, two little girls. And I think that concept has always stayed with me in terms of being a step parent to two girls. When you learn to love someone else's children, essentially that's what you're doing with other people's children that get an opportunity to play for you. And there's days when you might not like them, but at the same time, the root of why you're there is them, and it's to take care of them. So I've always had that purpose and always had that feeling just to take care of the guys while they're there and try to bring them along both athletically, socially, mentally, in every way, with the help of the coaches, obviously, and my wife. And my wife's a big part of what we do, and she comes to practice every day, comes to every game, and just enjoys the lifestyle that we all share with these kids.
And she's got equity, and she's a big part of this. That's got to be great. Listen, I can't stress this enough, but Vanderbilt made the NCAA tournament field three times in the 20th century. All right, I can't stress that enough. Now you're the gold standard, not just in college baseball, but I could argue in college sports. Did you know this was possible when you were first offered that opportunity at Vanderbilt?
Not really. I think, for some, it seemed like it could be a dead-end job. Vanderbilt's a tremendous university. The coach there before me was a wonderful man. He didn't have the resources that we have today. So I feel very fortunate. But in a lot of ways, too, Jim, I feel like we earned it. Eric Bakich at Michigan was our first assistant. Derek Johnson, who's now the pitching coach for the Reds, was our pitching coach at the time. And we just had a great staff, and we just took it upon ourselves to try to do as much as we possibly could in the early years and just start building it. And as we built it, it gained more attention inside the university. They saw it as being a positive program, much like any program that's positive at Vanderbilt. They felt like our baseball program was. So we started gaining more resources. And with that, started gaining a little bit more acclaim. And then kids decided that it was probably a cooler thing to be a part of our program. And then recruiting started to flourish a little bit. And that's where the David Prices and Sonny Grays and Mikey Miners and Alvarezes and so on started to come. And that put us in the situation that we were today. I mentioned that after we won the national championship. It's all connected. If we don't get to 204, we don't get to 207 and so on and so on. So all these kids we've had in the past, I congratulate them, and they go, come on, I didn't do anything. Well, yeah, you did. You built a foundation to get us from point A to point B.
Right.
Right. And that's what it was. So they're all responsible.
He is a two-time National Coach of the Year, a three-time SEC Coach of the Year, and they won the national championship, the College World Series title. Once again, Tim, you are good to your word. You said if you came to Southern California, you would come in studio and spend some time with me, and I really appreciate it. So good to see you.
I do, too. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Jim.
Always good to have you on the show. Even better to do it in person. I'll look forward to doing it again next year. Tim, thanks so much. Tim Corbin, head baseball coach at Vanderbilt. What a blast.